Okay, good evening. My name is Claire Gladewright. I'm the Acting Mayor of Kingborough. It is my pleasure to welcome you all to tonight's council meeting on Wednesday the 8th of April 2026 and welcome to those in the public gallery. Could you please make sure that your mobile phones are turned onto silent? It is 5:30pm and I now officially declare this meeting open. Council now operates under the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2025. Under these, I am required to advise you that A, an audio and audio-visual recording is being made of the meeting, and B, all persons attending the meeting are to be respectful of and considerate towards other persons attending the meeting, and C, language and conduct at the meeting that could be perceived as offensive, defamatory or threatening to a person attending the meeting or listening to the recording is not acceptable. The audio recording of council meetings is made publicly available on our website and meetings are live streamed on YouTube. I will now ask staff to confirm that the audio recording has started. Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, the Muwinina people, pay my respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Attendees this evening, we have myself, Acting Mayor Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson appears to be running a few minutes late, and Councillor Street. From the staff this evening, we have the Acting Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Smee, Director of People and Finance, Mr. Spinks, Director of Engineering Services, Mr. Mackey, Manager of Environmental Services, Ms. Quinn, the Manager of Kingborough Sports Precinct, Ms. Pereira, welcome. I understand this is your first council meeting. Lead Strategic Planner, Mr. Stander, Team Leader of Statutory Planning, Ms. Silver, Climate Change Advisor, Mr. Pierce, Communications Lead, Ms. Adams, Communications Officer, Mr. Heather, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs. Morton. Apologies this evening are from our Mayor, Councillor Reet. We're on page one, confirmation of minutes. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please, that the minutes of the open session of council meeting number 5 held on the 16th of March 2026 be confirmed as a true record. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Antoli. All those in favour?
Aye.
And against? Motion is carried unanimously. On page two, item number 5, workshops held since last council meeting. On the 23rd of March, we had a workshop on the budget. Still on page two, declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest they would like to declare? None. Page two, item 7, is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? Nope. Still on page 2, item 8, questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question without notice?
I'm Karen Groves, proud resident of Snug Tears. In Council's quarterly summary action report to December 2025, they mention that they'll be developing an unsealed roads policy by June this year and a rural stormwater policy also by June this year. How will either of these policies, maybe in theory, involve community input and how, especially considering some of the low literacy levels in rural communities?
Yeah, thank you for the question. We haven't fully, to be transparent, I haven't fully considered how we'll get consultation from the community on both of those policies. We've been short-staffed in both of those areas over the last 3 to 4 months and, again, being transparent, we're lagging behind in the development of both of those policies. So I'll take that question on notice.
Thank you. That's my only question.
Thank you. Any further questions from the gallery? Questions on notice from the public. Just a reminder that if you wish to submit a question on notice, you can do so by completing the relevant form on Council's website or by emailing casey@kingborough.tas.gov.au. We had 6 questions, the first regarding right to information from Mr Andrew Denman and an officer's response from David Rosen, the second regarding rabbit control from Mr Larry Dunnett and an officer's response from Renee Reichart, the third question regarding encroachment of Council land for the exclusion of the public from Trail Riders Action Club and an officer's response from Scott Basham. Fourth question was relating to Council's risk appetite in relation to landscape values from Mr. Brendan Charles and an officer's response from Adrian Stander. The fifth question regarding SAP review surveys and additional feedback from Mr. Brendan Charles and an officer's response from Adrian Stander. The sixth question was regarding verification of natural values, threatened and endangered species at Bonnet Hill from Mr. Brendan Charles, and there was an officer's response from Adrian Stander. We're now on page 6, item 10, questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? I've got Councillor Cordova, then Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. My first question is about use of pesticides. Recently, Griffith University released a new analysis of Australia's highest volume pesticide use, revealing that the majority of products widely used in Australian agriculture are banned in other parts of the world. So the headline there in the newspaper was around 84%. I just want to make sure I've got that figure right. But the question is, has this new research influenced councils thinking around the various pesticides that are used? That's my first question.
Ms Quinn, are you aware that everyone's pointing at you?
No.
Sorry.
Thank you for the question. I'm answering. No, I'm not aware of that research, so thank you for bringing it to our attention. I'll certainly follow up and read it. Council uses doesn't use that many pesticides. Mostly we use herbicide. And we do that in our strategic weed control program. We also, of course, use herbicide more generally in the maintenance of our public open space areas and roadside reserves. And we do that in line with legislation, as we've talked about previously. So we try to minimise it. And we certainly only use those pesticides as per the current Australian regulations. But very happy to follow up and look at the report.
Thank you. Thank you, Acting Mayor. And so the headline indeed was 84% of pesticides widely used in Australian agriculture are banned in other parts of the world. And the thrust of my question was, I guess, around, and I appreciate their response, but also around environmental runoff and potential effects on human health. So not necessarily exclusively around how council uses products, but also how agriculture in Kingborough may affect our waterways, our riparian zones and human health. I just think that's an interesting area for us to stay on top of. The second question through you, Acting Mayor, is around the missing middle in housing stock. So it's specifically around housing incentives. In the last month, there's been a lot of movement in this space, both from Brighton and from Hobart City Council. So Brighton recently said that if you build a house in Brighton, you won't pay rates for the first 12 months. Then 7 days ago, I see that Hobart City Council has released their inner city housing supply incentive policy. I don't want to talk about the actual merits of each policy. One of those I think does work, and one of them I think is not that effective in terms of improving housing stock and affordability. But my question is, with all of these other councils taking a lot of action on housing, what is Kingborough going to do about that, and will it become a main area of our focus in the next in the near term?
I guess the simple answer to that question is it'll become a priority if council makes it one. Now, at the moment, we have our statement on housing and we have the actions that are contained within that statement. But broadly speaking, initiatives such as financial incentives will need to be considered by council as part of the budget formulation, and other measures will require a decision from council to actively pursue them. So if the question is around what are we currently doing, we are currently doing what is listed in our statement on housing and nothing more. So it will take some initiative of council for us to be doing more than what we're currently doing.
Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, just getting my question. A couple of weeks ago, I was made aware of some vegetation clearing in Spring Farm near Apollone Drive. I then saw that myself and I was quite surprised to see that vegetation being removed. I thought that area was meant to be protected. I'm wondering how many significant trees were cleared. Was there any consultation for the environment impact and wildlife in this area? Because I thought that that part of that subdivision initially had overlays and codes to protect that area. And sorry, I didn't put this on notice beforehand.
Might be one we have to put on notice, do you think?
Unless Liz knows.
No, sorry, I'm not aware. I think I understand the area you're talking about, Councillor Midgley, but my understanding, if it is the area that I'm talking about, which is adjacent to the Spring Farm development, directly adjacent, south potentially of it, then that is a current planning matter, I believe.
Mr. Stander.
My understanding is that the vegetation has been cleared through a forestry practice plan. Unfortunately, I can't really give you more information on that, so perhaps something that we can get back to you on.
We'll take that on notice.
Any further questions from councillors? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Forgive me, I didn't email this through, but my question is regarding the Alona Oval, the community hall at the Oval. I was there on the weekend for the wood chopping festival, and it was a huge crowd and a lot of fun, but there was a problem with foul odour coming from the septic system. And so the question that I got hammered with was, of course, how often is the septic tanks cleared? I wouldn't have a clue. I'm wondering if that is a... I'm assuming that's a council responsibility, or is it the responsibility of someone else? And what is the situation with that?
I'm not aware. It's not an issue that's been raised with us, but we can certainly follow it up.
Any further questions? Okay, so we're still on page 6, item 11, questions on notice from councillors. There was one question on notice from Councillor Fox regarding soft plastics and an officer's response from Stuart Baldwin. So the open session adjourns and the planning authority commences at 5:42 p.m. Officers reports to the planning authority on page 8, development application for Link Road at 67 Village Drive and Alfred's Gardens in Kingston. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move, Councillor Midgley. Seconded, Councillor Bain. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. This proposal, as it's stated, is a link road and it will provide a private road connecting between the residential aged care facility, assisted living apartments, hairdresser, meeting room, cafe and offices at 67 Village Drive, Kingston, approved by a DA previously, and the retirement village with independent living units and communal building at lot 555 Alfred's Garden, Kingston, approved by a previous DA. And the purpose of the private road is to provide a more direct link for future staff to be shared by both facilities, as currently without the link road in place they would need to drive more than 1 kilometre up the road around each site through the local road network to access both facilities. It's a very comprehensive report. A lot of detail has been covered in regards to the purpose and reasons as to why it meets all the requirements in the planning scheme and all the different area objectives, and I support this. I also note there was a few community representations in regards to this, and a lot of that was around the impact of that road and the noise and the traffic, and I feel like that they have been addressed in the report. So I'm happy for this to go ahead, and maybe there might be less car use. People might be riding their bikes and going on scooters, so perhaps it might not be as busy as we think. But, yeah, no, on a serious note, it does meet all the requirements of the planning scheme. happy to recommend this for approval.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Further contributions, Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Look, likewise, I think it's a very detailed report. I'm surprised there was only one high conservation value tree, so that seems to be dealt with through an offset, and I don't see any reason why we would stand in the way to make it an effective connection point between the two retirement facilities. So happy to approve likewise.
Thank you. Further contributions, Councillor Fox.
Yes, thank you. I had concerns when I read this report about the flooding of this area, because having been on council for decades, I know that this land is often severely affected by heavy rain, and I was very pleased to be informed by staff that that's been taken into account, particularly in terms of a flood retention basin. So I'm pleased that that the residents won't have to have to worry about that. Thank you.
Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So I echo some of the points that have been made regarding the traffic impact and the concerns that were raised by the representations. I think they've been adequately addressed, but I do sympathise with the concern that people have regarding extra traffic because of the intensification of use of that site. But that isn't precluded by, I mean, the DA regarding the introduction of the hairdresser and the other amenity there is kind of a separate matter. But I just wanted to briefly address the issue of the very high conservation value tree. And I note that in the proposed condition number 7 of the permit, it stipulates that there'll be a financial contribution of $570 per tree paid into the council's environmental fund, and it kind of elucidates that in section 2.4 of the report. It's a eucalyptus globulus, but my understanding is that the financial contribution payment should be a last resort, and where possible the offset should be on site at first. And so I'm just interested in hearing a bit more about, obviously, it reads from the report like there was no space on site for an on-site offset to take place. But I just kind of wanted to know whether that, if it's more strategic to place the offset off-site, is that something that is at the discretion of the delegated officer, or you always have to follow the hierarchy that off-site offset is a very last resort?
I don't know whether I can answer your question, really. I'm not sure. I think, and it might be maybe Liz can answer it better than me, but obviously it's the last resort to take the offset. Would prefer to keep the tree. And because it's private land as well, that might have implications as to where the offset's used. Maybe it's preferable to use it in a public area instead. But I'm not quite sure, honestly. Yeah, sorry.
Did you want to add anything,
Ms. Green? Yes, I'll try. So you're absolutely right, Council Cordova, as per Council's offset policy, that financial offsets are the last part of the offset hierarchy, and the first thing is to avoid the impact if we can. And that's the environmental planner. I can't speak to this case, obviously, because I'm not involved in planning, but that is what they would have followed. It would have been the offset policy in that hierarchy of avoid the impact if possible. And then, as you say, if the offset can be on site and step through that. With individual trees, generally, as you can imagine, the best outcome is often when they are those offsets are put together and used in the environmental fund, because then, as opposed to getting generally, if it was going to be on site, you might ask the person to plant 5 trees to replace the one, because not all of those trees will survive. And in this environment, I'm imagining at Alfred's Garden, it's probably more a because it'll be so developed, it'll become a landscape sort of landscaped environment rather than a natural environment. And so I'm imagining that the environmental planner potentially considered that and thought that we would get a better conservation outcome by using a financial offset in this case.
Thank you. That makes sense. And the reason I'm so interested in it, I guess particularly in this case, but but more generally as well, is that the fragmentation of remnant native vegetation is one of the, well, it's one of many key concerns, particularly around the idea that I think in strategic planning, we really need to have green corridors throughout our urban built environment. And when there is this death by a thousand cuts where you lose one very high conservation value tree over here and one over there and then three over there, over time you lose those green corridors and that network effect that you can get for biodiversity in urban areas, not to mention the urban heat island effect and all of those kind of concomitant problems that you get, stormwater management and all kinds of reasons why it's a good idea to have more urban canopy coverage rather than less. But in this case, I have to take the report at its word from the expert that there truly was no alternative but to remove that one very high conservation value tree. As to the other issues that were raised by the representations, I think they're adequately addressed in the report, and so I'm willing to support the proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Further contributions? No. If not, there is a recommendation on page 25. Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up at all?
Thank you. Just to point out, thanks, Councillor Cordova, for reminding us, and I think of the vegetation matters, because it is one of those tricky things as we want to see development and we need housing and we need facilities like this, but it is about keeping that balance and the importance of our vegetation corridors. So, thanks for asking those questions.
So I'll put the motion. The recommendation is there printed on the screen. It was moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour?
Aye.
And against? Motion is carried unanimously. The Planning Authority adjourns and the open session recommences at 5:51 p.m. We're on page 81 now. Petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. Petitions received in the last period. At the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. We're now on page 81, item 15.1, Officers' Reports to Council. We're discussing land lease at the Kingborough Sports Precinct. There's a recommendation on page 83, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Antoli, seconded Councillor Midgley. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So this motion is to authorise the CEO to negotiate a 99-year lease to the state government for the Jack Jumpers, Jules High Performance Training Centre for a peppercorn rent, subject to the terms that are laid out in the recommendation. Earlier, council resolutions sought freehold transfer with a reversionary clause, and this proved legally untenable given the state's $20 million construction investment on the land. A long-term lease achieves the same protective intent, and council retains land ownership while giving the state the security of tenure required. Independent legal and financial advice supports the structure and key terms cap council's exposure. There's no depreciation liability, which makes our chief financial officer very happy. Crown self-insures, also happy, and assignment requires landlord consent. So consistent with the parallel arrangement for the Tasmanian Devils High Performance Centre. So I recommend this motion to council.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. It is always interesting when we decide on and agree on a matter and then it comes back to us like this. So I guess noting Councillor Antoli's great summary there, but just wondering if the author of the report would like to add any more information in regards to why this is the best way forward for council.
Mr. Sneed. Yes, thanks for the opportunity. I think this was always Council's preferred model. I recall that there was strong views held by a number of councillors that we should be leasing rather than transferring freehold. At the time, that wasn't a model that the state government were prepared to entertain. But I think what is now being recommended is an excellent outcome for Council in terms of retaining ownership of the land, without any of the liabilities as summarised by Councillor Antoli. And of course there is the financial impacts that would have occurred had we transferred that land at nil consideration. So I believe this is an excellent result for Council.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. And just a further question regarding the Jules female team, which is a really great outcome as well. Did the footprint, was it able to sort of enable them to be a part of that originally, or did that change? And will their sort of name be on the building as well and be acknowledged?
So certainly when we first entertained the notion of a high-performance training centre at the venue, it was just going to be the Jack Jumpers, and then as time has transpired, they have indicated an intention to apply for a licence for a women's team, that licence being granted, and it now will be a combined high-performance training facility for both the Jack Jumpers and the Jewels, and the facility will be developed with both teams in mind and branded accordingly.
Further contributions, Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just a question, I guess, around the facility itself. So this is just a lease for the land. Will Council play any role in the operations of the facility itself in terms of community use, or is that just between the Jack Jumpers, state government and the community?
So we have an agreement in relation to the how the community will use the facility, and that agreement delineates the hours of use and the type of use. And I want to be fairly clear that this is a training facility and it's a high-performance training facility. So when I talk about community use, I am talking about community use for training purposes and for higher-level training purposes. So it won't be a case that the community can rock up and use the facility for training. It will need to be arranged through the Jack Jumpers, and there will be primarily the usage will be, for example, for the Kings basketball team, higher-level training purposes.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you.
That's all. Further contributions, Councillor Antoli.
I have some questions, and I'm not sure if they can be answered now, but I'm happy for them to be taken on notice. So, obviously, they're going to be charged a peppercorn rent. I believe the foregoes a $25,000 per annum approximate rent based on what we've evaluated. But they will be charged, please confirm, full rates and charges. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Do we have an estimate of what that is to Council?
No, we would need to calculate those rates based on the value of the value of the property, and that value will come through once the certificate of completion is issued and the valuer general issues that amount. So we haven't had a stab at what the rates might be yet.
Okay. It's just too far in the future for us to be able to determine.
We could have a stab at what might be the rough rates, but we haven't done so yet.
Further contributions or questions? So I put the motion. There's a recommendation up there on the screen. Councillor Antoli, sorry, did you want to sum up?
No.
Okay. So all those in favour? And against, motion is carried unanimously. We're now on page 84, item 15.2, AGM Notice of Motion Response, supporting residents to improve energy efficiency. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Cordova, seconded Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. This was an excellent motion posed by the community during the annual general meeting, and the purpose of this report is to have Council respond to that. So during the... I'll just read the motion that was passed on the 2nd of December 2025, that during 2026, Kingborough Council investigates and reports back on affordable and cost-effective options to assist Kingborough residents to improve the energy efficiency, costs of running and comfort of their homes. And there's a great report here that discusses it that I'd like to unpack a bit further. But first, I just wanted to thank the members of the community who brought this to the AGM, and particularly Net Zero Channel, the community group that ran this excellent event earlier in the year. It was in March, and I just thought it was so... It was really useful, it was really practical, and particularly around the idea that there are a range of options, there's a spectrum of options, so you don't actually need to end up spending tens of thousands of dollars in order to see some real benefit. I just thought the way that that was explained and how accessible it was really crucial, because for many of us, it feels a bit impenetrable that, well, if I can't afford an EV, then how am I supposed to, you know, see those benefits? Or if I can't afford double glazed windows in my house, for example, you know, how do I see those benefits? Net Zero Channel did such a great job of explaining the many different ways that you can make a huge impact on your power bills, and it's a win-win-win. Win for the planet, win for the individual, and it's a win for your hip pocket as well. So I do encourage members of the community interested in learning those lessons to jump online and look at the resources offered by that particular group. The bit that I want to unpack particularly here in this response is around 2.4 in the background here, where it says that during 2017, as part of the Regional Climate Change Initiative, Kingborough Council participated in a trial bulk buy of energy efficiency devices, and it said for various reasons there were challenges there. I just wanted to unpack that a bit more, find out what those challenges were and whether the conditions that are creating those challenges will change in future.
Ms. Quinn or Mr.
Fix. Thank you for the question. The experience through the bulk buy initiative that was run through 2017 was there was high community interest. However, during the period of that operation, we discovered that the market was catching up to the competitive rates we were offering. So the heat-efficient hot water cylinders were becoming similar cost if bought privately rather than through this program. And so though there was a great uptake in the actual installation of the various products, it was decided that with the amount of work required to actually invest in this program, so there was a dedicated project officer that delivered the work as well as partnership with the private installers, that the cost benefit was not suiting the delivery of that program at the time.
Thank you. And so in terms of council's participation, is it like it mentions there that the kind of the resources aren't necessarily available. I guess I'm trying to get to the idea of if we did have more resources available, is there more that we could do? Or is it the fact that running programs like that bulk buy initiative are just not good? Then it sounds to me like they're just not good cost benefit, rather than if we had more resources, we could do more of those kinds of programs.
Style of delivery. So the one that was delivered in 2017 was a council-operated one with an independent deliverer. However, some of the options we are considering are a private delivery of those services through a community-centric group that may be able to provide it at more competitive rates. So essentially searching for a commercial operator rather than something that is operated and delivered by councils, but targeting still those at-risk houses.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you for that answer, and through you, Acting Mayor. That's really helpful. My final question on this is around those events like the one that Net Zero Channel put on at the Kingborough Community Hub. I found that to be of enormous benefit. It was really interesting, but it was really engaging and really accessible. I see enormous value in doing that, and particularly having a delivery partner like Net Zero Channel, it felt like that worked well. So my question is about rolling that out elsewhere, and you know, if people missed it that time, wouldn't it be great if they could get it in another place in 6 months' time and have a kind of rolling series of those initiatives? Yeah, please unpack for me what the future looks like with respect to running out more programs like that.
Mr. Pearce.
Absolutely. So as mentioned in the report, there was a collaborative session held by City of Hobart as the facilitator, which involved a number of organisations such as councils, Aurora, TasNetworks and the state government to identify what the current gaps in delivery are and where the opportunities sit. What we found is at present there is a lot of programs designed for education and information, but the financial incentives are quite low or have concluded. What we were potentially concerned with if we went out with another community education program through council is being another voice in an already noisy space. We want to ensure that there is consistency, and so potentially directing people to those programs that already exist rather than replicating in-house. As to the Net Zero Channel program, so that was... the outcomes based on a project funded by the Department of State Growth through Renewables, Climate and Future Industries Tasmania, or RECFIT. And we collaborated with Net Zero Channel where possible to ensure they had access to council venues to provide the outcomes. It was great to see the strong community uptake, and in the future we remain interested to collaborate with them and other operators where possible to give them usage of those council spaces. But the caution is just making sure that we don't add, as I say, another voice to an already noisy space, that we target the gaps in that service delivery.
Cordova.
Thank you. I really appreciate those answers, and I'll conclude my remarks by, I guess, drawing our attention to something we're all very aware of, which is this excruciating cost of living crisis that is getting worse and worse, and it's now more relevant and more pertinent than ever that we can find every way and every angle and every utility that we have at our disposal to try and ease those cost of living pressures. This is one of those areas where there's a lot that needs to be done at a state government and at a federal government level to ameliorate that harm that's being done to everyday residents of Kingborough. But this is one of those areas where, as a local council, we can lean in and do our bit. So I just think it's such a valuable contribution that the council is making, and anything we can do to support those local community groups to spread those messages and make life a bit easier for Kingborough residents, I support. So thank you once again to the author and authoriser of this report, and also to that community group for their great work. Thanks.
I just had a couple of questions. It says at 2.3 that through council we provide access to the HEATS, the Home Energy Audit Toolkits. Could you let us know what they are, please?
Toolkits include, and apologies, it'll be a bit vague because I don't know specifics, but they're designed for community members to be able to be trained and then use these to conduct heat efficiency reviews of their own homes. So there's a number of tools. I don't think we have the laser-based heat monitors, as some other kits do, but it is to encourage people to become energy conscious and energy literate of their own homes free of charge.
So is it something that you can download off the council website, or where do you get hold?
So there's a number of tools within the kit that they can take home, as well as the manuals that they can complete to understand their own efficiency.
So it's something that they borrow and they bring back. Oh, that's so great. I never knew that we did that. Maybe it's something we could put out there a bit more. Yes, Councillor Cordova, I went to that event by Net Zero Channel, and it was really, really valuable. It was so sort of enlightening, just the things that you can do around the home that are energy, you know, cost efficient. So, yeah, hats off to that group. They're doing a great job. I just wanted to ask a little bit more about the investigations that you're going to be reporting back on by June. The movers of this motion got in touch with me and let me know about Merribeck Council. I'm just wondering if they got in touch with you as well.
Yes, they did. So speaking with them as I'm able to, progressing this report, so where they are aware of new programs, they do share them with me directly. Through the workshop I've mentioned with City of Hobart, we did look at a number of other programs offered through other states and where the Tasmanian Local Government Act doesn't allow us to deliver some of those. So some of those include property-linked loans through rates programs that's not available to Tasmanian councils to deliver. But ensuring that we understand whether it is educational, whether it is partnering with private deliverers, or what potential alternatives there are to deliver those outcomes. This is an important piece, both from a cost saving but also a climate adaptation perspective, as heat and coal begins to impact houses at a higher level in the future.
Okay, amazing. Yes, the Merribeck Council, if you didn't know, are offering up to $3,000 for their residents to install solar panels or other improvements to make their homes more comfortable, which is phenomenal. I don't know how they're in that position, but it would be really interesting to get some numbers and work out and how much that costs them. But I'm glad that's on your radar. Are there any further contributions? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. And, yeah, just to echo what a number of people have said, and also to acknowledge the ZeroNet channel, because I know they've been doing some really great initiatives voluntarily with a passion with, you know, for the climate and care for the earth. So I want to acknowledge what they've been doing as well in community and the different forums that they run and the research. And it's really great as well to have a climate change advisor on council. I know that we didn't have that position and we really wanted that for a while, and I can read in this report I can really see the knowledge and breadth of that position and what the officer brings to that, and also education for us as well. I learned a lot about what's happening in other councils and the community, and yeah, it's increased that gap in the knowledge. And even as we've heard about today, the kits that we can take home. I know that we used, when I worked at the City of Hobart, they would be lent out, but it's great to know that we have those things as well, because people are wanting to improve for many of the factors that have been raised here tonight, and the cost of living crisis does then kind of raise other areas to kind of take action. So yeah, thank you very much to the author, and thanks again to the Net Zero Channel.
Further contributions? Councillor Antoli, did you want to sum up?
Yep.
Oh, sorry, Councillor Cordova, did you want to sum up? No. I will put the motion then. The recommendation is on page 86. All those in favour? And against? Motion is carried unanimously. We're on page 87, item 15.3, AGM motion, engagement with rural communities. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Antoli. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. It was a long weekend, wasn't it? Sorry, I'm just nominating to move all of these. I had a lot of time to read. So maybe we should make all council meetings on a Wednesday night. It gives us a bit more time to read the agendas. So from this is a really great motion, again, that was put forward at the AGM. And the motion was that council investigate and make recommendations on additional engagement methods than those currently employed with the rural and semi-rural communities of Kingborough on council actions that will affect them. And I think the great thing about this motion is that, you know, we are the council, local government is the council that's closest to the people. And the people have spoken around, person who's put this motion forward, they're in the audience tonight, so thank you so much for coming and putting the motion forward, that, you know, they're seeing on the ground things that are impacting them and maybe where council can improve. And as a council, as an organisation, we thrive to continuously improve our services and operations, and this is just one area as well. Thanks so much also to the author of the report, and I understand that they have had conversation with the community member who moved this motion and sort of have worked out a plan, but also the report provides us with a lot of information in regards to what council currently does in regards to our framework and our policy around community engagement by employing the IAP2, the public participation spectrum. It also identifies the opportunities for growth as well, and acknowledges areas that council can do better, I guess, and can improve when communicating and engaging with our rural communities. And it also looks at I'm just getting my notes here and I should put my glasses on. It also looks at the value of direct community. If matters are affecting our rural community members, then we need to maybe re-look at how we're doing that. And if it's actually affecting them, then how can we move forward to involve them? So I have a couple of questions as well and some sort of further comments. And I did go then have a look at our policy. And with the recommendation, it says that council resolves to consider investigating and implementing, where appropriate, the use of additional engagement tools and methods to better enable rural and semi-rural communities to engage with council on matters that may affect them. And I'm wondering if there's a time frame for this, or I guess is it open-ended depending on the matters that come, or do we have sort of a time frame in regards to what those tools will be, and will that come back to council?
Ms. Adams.
Thank you for the question, Councillor Midgley, and through you, Acting Mayor. We resolved to further investigate sort of engagement methods. So, for instance, through the rates notice, we will run a survey and a community engagement to test the water as far as what channels our community members, especially the rural communities, are receiving council information, etc. So that's one of the tools that we'll propose. As far as the time frame, that will inform the direction as far as whether or not we investigate other tools and methods, etc. So if the response comes back that we're not reaching our community members in our rural areas, then we'll look at different tools, etc., such as perhaps that you have mentioned yourself, like feedback forms, etc., events, and the like, etc. So, yeah, that was one of the first sort of steps of this coming rates notice, that there will be an engagement to, you know, find out where we go from there.
Thank you. And I guess with that, then, how will we measure that we've been successful?
Okay, so it's quite hard to do benchmarks. It's basically we look at the level of involvement as far as how many community members engage with us, so whether it's online or whether it's in writing, etc. We do quite well over a broad scale of tools as far as online, as I said, and in written form. So we do quite well with our surveys and how many people participate. We also have great engagement with our rural communities through our community forum, which is a great tool. And we are currently looking at doing a drive to involve more inner city community groups. We're actually looking at trying to build up the attendance for that, so that we'll do a communications drive there to sort of re-engage with some of the community members that have drifted away. We'll also look at doing a communications promotion over the next 12 months to inform the community members how they can engage with their council, as far as asking questions at council meetings, writing in questions or notice, etc. So a bit of a communications drive. This has encouraged us to, you know, look at, as you said, continuous improvement and how the community may be aware of, you know, engaging with council in that matter. Yeah.
Thank you. I have a few more questions and thoughts. The Kingborough Community Forum group. Is it forum or group? I forget. Kingborough Community Forum. It does involve a lot of the rural kind of groups, but I often hear, and I have heard this for the last few years, especially when you go to Bruny Island and different, you know, Gordon and down there, that there is still that thought of council doesn't, you know, engage, communicate with us, or we don't know what's happening. Like, you do hear that when you're out and about, and I think that feels like the kind of thoughts around this consultation. And I do wonder at all if we could think about perhaps the Kingborough Community Forum being run in the more kind of regional areas, not maybe in Kingston Central, or if we had an idea, you know, that came from like a little network group that came off that forum. Like, is there, I don't know, there's just lots of different tools. And I guess if we think about place-based kind of engagement as well, like rather than people having to come here, that we kind of go to them, and looking at maybe like hybrid sort of style where, I don't know, the CEO or the mayor might have a little office work once a day in Bruny or something like that. So the community can really see that we are kind of there and working and being there for the community, or there's the mayor in the chair day or something like that. So we're visible and we're seen and people can kind of come to us. I feel like we need to kind of do maybe something like that, because it is definitely the voices that I have heard the last couple of years. And, yeah, I think it would be good to think about that. And also if we think about the policy as well, if we were to look at like our different kind of, not, you know, vulnerable or isolated or whatever kind of communities, I guess from a perspective where people who don't engage or find it hard to engage, I think rural and that sort of community kind of can, you know, fit in the same sort of areas around our older people or people with disabilities, people who might not necessarily engage, and kind of what are the barriers. So maybe when we relook at the strategy, we kind of think about, you know, how do we reach our isolated and vulnerable groups, and thinking about that when we are doing our big kind of consultation, or, you know, important consultation, how are we really considering, yes, we've got this great
IAP2 method, but are we really thinking about the people who we might not necessarily target? And yeah, you know, West Winds, the different community groups and things like that are really great places to do pop-ups. So I hope that in kind of the moving forward and the thinking, we also kind of, yeah, consider some ideas like that. They were just some thoughts that I had.
Further contributions, Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I think that Councillor Midgley has touched on a few points that I also would like to discuss, and I definitely agree with much of what she's shared. My concern is that the resolution as it's currently framed might come across to the community as a bit weak because it doesn't commit Council to anything. And there's a risk, I think, of community frustration if rural residents perceive this as a non-committal. And I'm certainly not suggesting for a moment the author of the report was saying that, but maybe if we could get an understanding of how long it might take from that rates notice survey, would we be able to get a response, and approximately what month afterwards could we receive back a report?
Ms. Adams. That's a fair question, Councillor.
It's usually within a month of turnaround, a survey, and the survey would find out how our ratepayers are receiving information, whether they're using the website, whether they're reading the state or local medias, etc. So that will give us statistical information about how we promote our engagements, etc. Yes, I mean, I would estimate that within a couple of months after the rates notice, you know, give or take, receiving them back, etc., and giving everybody sufficient time to participate in the engagement. I mean, our team is a small team, but we move pretty fast. We are currently undertaking a number of engagements, and that will continue throughout the years, and that is part of our commitment to our community to always engage with them and always to find, you know, new and inventive ways, because you know, the community, it is quite, you know, if you don't understand what council does and how to involve yourself, it can be, you know, quite isolating. So while, you know, these suggestions are very valued, we have to find out how people are getting their information before we go forward on that. But, yeah, improving community forum, building up our community groups, because they represent our communities and therefore can feed in information, making sure that they have access to our executive are very important and very valuable. So I found this report really good to really look at the way that we do communicate and engage, and yeah, developing some statistics where we can go forward over the next, you know, 12 months, I think improve that would be really good.
Thank you. And through you, Acting Mayor, would the month of August give your team enough time to maybe gather a report back to us if we asked?
Ms. Adams.
Through you, Acting Mayor, yeah, definitely I think August would be fine. I mean, it'll be a very small survey as far as finding out where the channels are, and then maybe potentially looking at signing up to build up a database for sending out engagements so that people can be on like a newsletter list so that they and that can be open all the way around throughout the year, so that's not going to be a time frame sort of thing. That'd be ongoing, so yeah.
Councillor
Antoli. Thank you. So, based on that feedback, may I propose that we make a small amendment to the recommendation that the final paragraph after the words affect them would read, and that a report back to council be provided by August 2026.
Okay, so Midgley.
Councillor Antoli was the seconder, so someone else has to move.
Okay. Yeah, but all he's proposing to do is amend the motion that's before us. So if it's okay with you.
Is that okay with you, Councillor Midgley?
Again, it's there, is it? Sorry, it's just there, is it? Engage with council. Okay.
Councillor Antoli, did you know to say?
No, that's great. Was that accepted by the mover? I couldn't hear.
Sorry, yes. Okay. I was reading it in mumble. Sorry, yes.
Okay. Further, that's now the substantive, yeah. Further contributions. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. It's been a good discussion so far, and the value that I want to add to what is already a good discussion, and I think having a deliverable of a report by August is a fine thing. I wanted to unpack the IAP2 spectrum a little bit for those people who are just hearing that and not kind of knowing specifically what it's about. When we're talking to the community, are we informing, consulting, involving, collaborating, or empowering? That's what the IAP2 is all about, because there are different types of... The thing with communication is it's a kind of amorphous thing that talks about a lot of different things. We're not just talking about giving a survey to people. Sometimes we're talking about council's already done this thing, here's what it looks like and here's what it does. Other times it's about we want you, the community, to completely shape this process. And a lot of the time it's somewhere in the middle. So it's a two-way street that the council needs to be really clear when we talk to the community about to what extent are we asking for the community to co-design this process. So, for example, I think it's a great thing to talk and empower the community regarding stormwater management, but I very much doubt that we're just going to go to community consultation and say to the community, please design our stormwater systems for us, because there's a certain level of technical expertise that's required to build a stormwater management system, for example. When we're talking about how to improve engagement with rural communities, it isn't as simple as just, and this has already been touched on, it's not as simple as just giving rural communities more surveys, because there's consultancy fatigue, and we're hearing from the same people over again. There's a selection bias that takes place when you ask for feedback. So there's a lot of nuance in this discussion that I just thought was worth touching on. Overall, you know, this goes to council's continuous improvement policies as well, that we can always do better and we should always be trying to do better. And part of that is to empower the community by providing timely, efficient and useful information where it really matters to them. But also it means unapologetically at times being clear that some of the decisions that have been made are for a purpose and for a reason, and then providing the evidence as to why that was a good idea. So I mentioned the example of stormwater management, but particularly something that comes to mind now is local area traffic management. This is an area which is really, really important. The community has a valid and important contribution to make in that discussion around co-designing, you know, where you want traffic to flow in your community and how. But also there's a level of input that technical officers at council need to provide to help the community understand why some things are good decisions and why other things might have negative consequences if we go down that popular community path, where there might be reasons why that wasn't the recommendation in the first place. So it's a nuanced discussion, and it requires a lot of different... I think it requires us to be very clear about where on that IAP2 spectrum we are falling at any given decision-making point. So that's what I wanted to add to this, but I think it's been a good discussion so far, and I'm happy to support the motion. Thanks.
Further contributions. I just wanted to say that I think that there is a real appetite in the community for understanding how council functions a bit more, and maybe we're not getting that message out there. I was really surprised to hear recently that people didn't realise that they could just email their councillor to make a time to go and have a chat about a concern that they had. So I'm wondering how we can communicate that a bit more with the community. I don't know if the mayor and I need to do some little videos and we get it out there on our social media. But yeah, the community really should know that that's what us councillors are here for, and you can ring us and email us at any time, make an appointment. I know there are some councillors who are super, super engaged with the community, and that's fantastic. I really like this idea of the newsletter that goes out. I think that's a really useful tool. It's a tool that people can subscribe to, and then if they're finding that they're getting too much information in their inbox, they can unsubscribe at any time. But that would be a really great way to alert people to different events that are happening, the different surveys that are happening, just general information. So I really like that idea. I don't know what that means in the sort of back end, if it means we need to get a special program or something, but there's definitely tools out there that can support newsletters. I had a few questions about the Kingborough Community Forum. Who writes the terms of reference for that forum?
Through you, Acting Mayor. The actual groups come up with it, the terms of reference, so yeah.
Okay, so yeah. I'm wondering then if, I'm not quite sure who the chair is at the moment, Jill Hickey. I wonder if Jill would like to have a discussion with the group if they wanted to review the terms of reference, if they wanted to discuss about this kind of having those forums in various locations, or if it was something that could happen more online. I mean, I remember when we used to have our council meetings online during COVID. If there's those sorts of possibilities that would make attending those forums more accessible to people who are, you know, way down south or on the island. I'm also wondering the terms of reference for that forum, if it has to only be sort of groups that are formed formally, or if we can capture more people by not having that as one of the parameters. What do you think, Sam?
So we currently have about 17 to 20 regular members that come along for every 3 months. Going back to your first question, we do it online. We currently hold it in. We've moved back to the chambers because we currently get two Bruni Island groups come online, and the audio and reception and everything is fantastic. So outside of their not getting any food, they get excellent advice. They have great access to our CEO or our directors who turn up and regularly answer questions. So that is going to be part of the drive this year to promote more groups. The actual terms of reference are only stipulate that you have to be a Kingborough group. You have to represent. You can't be an isolated. You can't be just small Beatles in Kingborough sort of group. That you have to represent a bunch of people. But you can petition to join. We've just accepted the Kingborough Land Users Body because they represent because they fit the terms of reference. So they'll be hopefully attending next meeting, and as I said, we're going to do a drive to the Woodbridge and the community, some of the groups who may not realise that we are now quite significantly online, and it's quite easy to, you don't have to drive 40 minutes up from Woodbridge to attend on a dark winter's night. You can just get online. So we'll be doing a push, the chair and the group, and to reconnect with a lot of groups. And sorry, your other question was.
I think we've got another one.
Just rambling. I know the mover of this motion was more concerned with those rural residents who aren't located in a nice, easy sort of an area that's recognised as Woodbridge or Kettering or whatever, that there are more spread out. And so how do we capture those people? You're saying you don't want those little smaller groups, but I'm wondering if that's too limited, that if we could somehow incorporate another version of a group in that sense.
Good question, sorry. Technically, there have to be issues that all of there's a commonality. So we have the Kingborough Dog Walking Association, so there's a lot of dogs, etc. So it's not, I was, being a little bit narrow in the sense of, the types of groups. But we actually have a lot of the rural. We're actually struggling with our Kingston groups or our Margate groups, etc. So there's quite a good connector with the rural groups. But you're right, there is always more that any organisation can do to engage with its residents. And it's a difficult thing. And it's obviously we're a small team. There's only so much you can do. We're a large area, et cetera, but I think that your suggestion of visiting local areas, and I think that, that potentially that there's something in there, especially for our council councillors and Lord Mayor and Deputy Mayor, that that could, you know, that could be quite beneficial, because you know Tasmanians like in person, have always liked in person. They like to be rung up, they like to be handed something. So it's a good suggestion. So not everything can be done online. So yeah.
Okay, great. So sorry, just to clarify, the terms of reference are written by the forum themselves, and so if they wanted to broaden those terms, they certainly could do that.
Yes. Yes, I believe so. Yeah.
Great. Thank I think you. So. Further contributions, Councillor Fox.
Yes, I really appreciated this report. I thought it was very comprehensive and well written. I did have a question from a young mother recently who said that she felt it would be really nice to know more about events well in advance, and that maybe there could be a calendar put out, and so that you'd know, for example, what to plan ahead with the family, to know that you're going to this but not to that, and to be able to budget for that. And also poster sites at parks and playgrounds, because a lot of mums or parents with children come from other places, not just Kingborough residents, and they come here and they spend their money and they visit friends, etc., catch up with people at the parks and the playgrounds and at the hub, for example. And if there were poster sites at those locations so that they could know what's going to be worth coming down to Kingborough for in the future. It's just another way of communicating with people who haven't got time to go online, don't have many connections in the community, don't get rate notices, and it's they might be missing out and they might be needing some socialisation. So just wondering if we could consider that.
Thank you for your question. Through you, Acting Mayor. We do have poster signs at the community hub. I agree, it is poster sites are very good. We do also, for our large events, put them up on the roadsides, like many other schools and halls, etc., running events. It is difficult because there's obviously planning constraints about putting up notices everywhere, but we have discussed as a large communications groups, which includes the community development team, about setting up particular dedicated areas with posters. So that could definitely be back on the cards. But yeah, the community hub does put up posters, and there are around in certain locations, like Channel Court, like at the Kin Space down at Kingston Beach, etc. But it is difficult to find those spaces. We do obviously advertise on our website and Facebook, and we do promote events in the future, etc. But we couldn't do it once a year or put a calendar out, because it's a revolving feast and things are, you know, come up and get created through the year. So that's unfortunate in that sense. But yes, outside of online and on social media, we do have a number of poster sites that, yeah.
Thank you.
No worries.
Further contributions, Councillor Cordova.
Yeah, just a question, as I've already spoken, thank you, Acting Mayor. Question about rural youth particularly. So that's one area I mentioned. I think we hear from some people more than others, and some people are obviously harder because there isn't that, like the selection bias works in two directions, that there's a selection bias for some people who really want to be engaged and want to participate in communications and consultations, and then there's some people who definitely don't. So I'm interested to know how we're going to confront that problem, particularly around rural youth, but also other cohorts, culturally, linguistically diverse communities and other cohorts where it's sometimes more difficult to get involvement. Young people not in education, employment and training, and just wondering whether we're reaching out through schools and sports clubs as well as trying to deal with that vexed issue of the not in education, employment and training issue. Thanks.
That was a question.
The question is, what are we going to do about rural youth? And then various layers within that.
Thank you, Ms. Adams.
Thank you. Through you, Deputy Acting Mayor, sorry. Excellent question. Generally, we deal with students through our community development team through the schools, basically. It's obviously the central location. It's a safe space to be communicating with students. We do have, as you sure aware, Councillor, the YAC, the Young Youth Action Kimbra. Sorry, I always get it. Which in my last meeting of them, I was quite, I was very happy. It was quite a big group, so it waxes and wanes like many, you know, many things, many groups, etc. But yeah, this year's is quite good. So they're an excellent group of young people who are motivated and designing events and policy stuff with our community development team, which is fantastic. But yes, rural youth would be accessed through schools, through our networks, etc. We don't do a lot of work in that area because engaging young students in it's quite difficult. We did for the sports stuff. We actually had, thanks to some councillors' help around here, had an excellent participation rate in our survey, and we got some valuable data which has gone on to, you know, inform a lot of our policy and development stuff, which is fantastic. So, yes, through schools.
Further contributions? Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up?
Quick one to note. Yeah, thank you so much, everyone, for their contribution. Lots of ideas. And with the council, yeah, I look forward to the report that comes back to us and to hear, you know, what the community feedback is as well. That'll be really interesting. And just noting there's a real openness I can hear about continuous improvement and how we can do better to engage with our community in general and also our rural community, which this motion puts to as well. And I just also want to acknowledge that we, you know, we have a small but mighty team in our comms and engagement. I think with only two staff, some councils have a lot more numbers in that area. It's a big job. They cover what we're talking about here, road closures and all that kind of area. So it's a really important function, role of council. I just want to thank them for the work that they do as well.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. So I'll put the motion. It's printed up there on the screen or on page 89. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against, motion is carried unanimously. We're now on page 90, Treasury Management Policy Review. There's a recommendation on page 91. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move Councillor Antoli, seconded Councillor Bain. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So this is a routine triennial review of our Treasury Management Policy 3.8 version 4.0. That got a bit confusing when I was reading that in my brain. Changes are minor and administrative. There's a credit rating agency updated from the existing reference to S&P Global. Office titles updated to reflect current structure. The policy framework governing council borrowings, investment and cash management is unchanged, and that's been assessed as meeting strategic needs. There's no financial impact, and I did have a question, if I may. So the policy retains a preference for fossil-free authorised deposit-taking institutions where the rates are equal or better. Could I just have a little bit of an update on whether or not that has served us well? Have we ever done a comparison about what we could have made if we had the investments in a fossil authorised deposit versus a fossil free, and whether or not the policy moving away has made any difference at all?
Thank you for the question. The way we do this is when we have money to place or to reinvest, we obtain quotes from a variety of institutions. We select that has the best rate, and in the event that a fossil fuel free institution has a rate that is better or equal to others, we will select that one, provided within the other parameters of the policy. We don't then do a retrospective review of, you know, how much extra are we earning as a result of that had we not taken that decision. So we just make that decision at the time based on the best rate and the policy parameters.
So we only have this as a policy to bias towards a fossil-free one when all things are equal or better. Okay, that's all. Thanks.
Further contributions. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I'm just throwing my highlighter around. I actually wanted to speak about the same thing. So I feel like the last speaker almost stole my thunder there. Great minds think alike. Although there's a second half to that. There's a second half to that aphorism that's worth looking up later. Key aspects of council investment policies is what I'd like to talk about. Thinking now around ethical investment, we have mentioned fossil fuel, but there's also a lot of other aspects to ethical investment that relates to screening of the types of authorised deposit-taking institutions that you're looking at, but also prohibited investments. So I think it's a worthy community conversation to have around, you know, would we... Well, I think everybody can figure out what I'm trying to say when I say that some authorised deposit-taking institutions have a different ethical standard to others with respect to where they park their money, which means that when you deposit money with those financial institutions, you're in essence supporting their financial decisions. So my question is, what work has been done in the last 3 years around having an ethical investment policy or screening where we put Kingborough residents or Kingborough ratepayers' money, and what are their ethical parameters around who gets to hold on to our money?
Mr. Spinks.
Thank you. It's a good question, and you're right that just focusing on those institutions that do or don't support the fossil industries in some ways is a bit narrow. So there are broader considerations. The difficulty that we have is that at the moment where there's a website or an organisation that does that assessment for us, but in that wider context of it's very, very difficult to obtain some objective information or criteria or rating or words to that effect of institutions that are ethical or not, and how do we assess that? So we certainly have looked at it, but the challenge we have is trying to provide a provider, a third party, a source who can provide some kind of objective opinion to us, because we're just not capable, we just to do it ourselves.
Thank you for that. And through you, Acting Mayor, I would have thought that this is an area that a lot of organisations, both in the public sector and, of course, in the private sector, would have grappled with. And so I just wonder whether the Australian Institute of Company Directors or other such organisations would have almost like pro forma governance guidelines around what an ethical investment policy would, could and should and might look like that we could adapt for our own purposes. And I think the reason why I'm kind of pushing that point is I think it would take a lot of the heat out of these questions. It's very easy, I think, to just ignore this altogether and say, look, it's too difficult to choose where council draws the line as to what's ethical and what isn't. And as a result, we kind of don't ever do anything in that space. And that means that we're taking ratepayers' money and putting it in areas that they might feel very upset about. So I think we kind of have an obligation to the community to investigate what an ethical investment policy would look like and then have that feed into this policy here. I guess if we don't know off the top of our heads what that pro forma or template or guidance might be from some of those organisations, then I won't spend too much more time on it. But I just think it's this in my 6 years on council, this has come up both times that we've talked about this policy. It's kind of the area where people's minds turn to for various different reasons. Obviously, I'm trying to make the point that we should be more ethical, and maybe others might make the point, well, what does it matter? It's not important. There's heat in that conversation. There's a tension there because there's no framework around how we look at it. So that's why I think having an ethical investment policy on the books would really inform our treasury policy as well. So those are my two cents on that issue. But I'm keen to hear if there's any further commentary around that, then I'd welcome it, but otherwise...
Thank you. I can add to that. So as part of our research, we did become aware that there are organisations out there that are starting to do more ESG-type ratings, so environmental, social and governance, rather than just simply the fossil fuel question. So I've actually just made some inquiries to a couple of organisations around that, what's involved, do they rate Australian institutions, is there a fee involved to get that information? So we're just sort of still working our way through that, but at the moment I think what the policy reflects is the best information that we have at this point in time.
Thank you.
Any further contributions? Councillor Antoli, did you want to sum up? No, I'll put the motion then as printed there on the screen or on page 91. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against, motion is carried unanimously. We're now on page 107, proposed new road name, Trial Bay View in Kettering. There's a recommendation on page 109 and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I note that Harbour View Rise wasn't acceptable to the nomenclature board, so I think that coming up with the name Trial Bay View obviously ticks all the boxes, and I'd support the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Further contributions? No. In that case, I will put the motion as printed on the screen. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, motion is carried unanimously. Page 121, appendices. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Bain. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I just wanted to note the one of the appendice items, the Kingborough Environmental Fund. What a great document to provide such thorough detail about what Council is doing with the Kingborough Environment Fund. And I think my favourite part of reading that was the land owner reflections. And hopefully we've all had a chance to read about this, because it really does provide an aspect of Council, I guess, that we don't always hear about and celebrate. And there was the one there from the land owner reflections from Martin and Suzanne, that, you know, say there's an awful lot of land in Kingborough that I think needs protecting, and this sort of approach that's needed. We would certainly recommend this process because it's got an excellent outcome. It's been an interesting process. It's been educational for us too, learning more about the trees and the plants and the wildlife of our property. I think Council needs to put more resources into these teams of people and their expertise. It's a very important program. Kingborough is a wonderful area and it has to be managed extremely carefully. Otherwise, it will end up with it like every other area, too urbanised. The world needs places like this looked after for the future. It's not all about development and cement. It's about preserving the environment, because without the environment, we humans haven't got a lot left. And there's a lot of stories around that and what that means for them. It is a really great program. It's great that we can get people involved. And I've, you know, talking about the engagement and talking to people in the community, I've had actually some of these landowners sort of, you know, stop in the street and have a chat, and how important this is to them and the meaning that it has for them. So, yeah, thanks to the staff involved, and it is such an important program that we have.
Thanks, Councillor Midgley. I too had that written down to mention tonight. It is a really lovely report, reading those reflections from the community. We heard from Louise, Susie, Martin and Suzanne and Christine, and I won't do what you just did, but there are some really lovely stories there, so I encourage everyone to go and have a look. Further contributions, Councillor Cordova, then Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. My question is also around the same report that we've been discussing, particularly around, we're now 60% through the Kingborough Environment Fund implementation plan and well placed to achieve the 12 conservation targets by 2027. I'm interested in knowing the project selection process and to hear just about what projects might be on the horizon, particularly around, so I'm looking on page 7 of the report, which is page 152, and there's a table at the top there that says that we've already completed the Alocasiorina duncani planting, we've done coastal scrub revegetation project on Cloudy Bay. There's a eucalyptus amygdalina forest and woodland on sandstone revegetation project at Clora. And there's another one there that I won't try and pronounce, but I'm interested to know how we select those projects, and I guess what's the, for want of a better term, the scientific rigour that goes into choosing, well, we're going to prioritise this priority vegetation. How does it work and what's coming up next?
Ms Quinn.
Thank you for your question. The Kingborough Environmental Fund governance, so it's governed by a steering committee, and that steering committee, as you can see in the report, you can see the names of the people there, so they are experts in their field, in the species and vegetation communities that we need to target through the Kingborough Environmental Fund. So to remind people, the targets come from the losses. So where we lose vegetation through doing infrastructure projects, developments, whatever it might be, the offset means that we need to find something equivalent somewhere else in the municipality of Kingborough. So those projects that you listed in the table on page 7 relate directly because we've lost those values through some sort of development in Kingborough in the past. And what we try to do with the fund is, you can imagine through all the different development applications and projects that go on, we lose bits of blue gum forest here and bits of blue gum forest over there throughout the municipality, and the fund pulls those financial offsets together and tries to find a site where those values are intact and in good condition somewhere in the municipality. So one offset project is made up of many offsets. Yep, for that same value. So the targets come from the losses. So depending on how much we've lost is how much we need to find. And as you can see on page 7, we're various ways through the different projects, and that's because offsets are coming into the fund all the time. So we're finding offsets for projects from, 2022, as well as, offsets because we continue to use our biodiversity offset policy. So financial offsets come into the fund every year, which you can see through the finances. So some of those targets, like for the blue-winged parrot, we haven't got very far through because they're only quite new. Those losses have only occurred in the last couple of years, and it takes a while then to determine what the project is. So the project officer, Nicholas Alexander, comes up with the project design and he tests that with the steering committee. And so then the steering committee will actually review and alter and determine what that project is going to be and where it is going to be. Yeah.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. It's fascinating and really important. My final question on this through you, Acting Mayor, is about do we get to set our own priorities? Obviously, you've just explained how the committee looks at it, but to what extent is this informed by the state legislation, Threatened Species Act, or the federal EPBC? Do we just set our own priority, or do we have to try and link in with state and federal priorities when it comes to either individual species protection or habitat protection?
Ms Quinn.
Thank you. Both. So the biodiversity offset policy is related to our planning scheme. And so the planning scheme and how those codes are written, so how the biodiversity code is written, determines what those priorities are, as does the biodiversity offset policy. But we've done that based on state and federal legislation. So swift parrots are endangered under federal government legislation, and therefore that flows through that they're important in the planning scheme, they're important in the Kingborough Environmental Fund. So the biodiversity offset policy, which is the head of power, is directly related to the Nature Conservation Act, which is the state legislation, and the EPBC Act, which is the federal government legislation for the environment. So they do reflect each other. But the actual determinant of what are those values is through the scheme and the offset policy itself.
Thank you. And so through you, Acting Mayor, my final thing to say is that the projects are enormously valuable. They're incredibly interesting, and it's yes, it is about those amazing stories that you hear from the landowners who are protecting special places for the future. It is about that, but it's also about a very tangible and practical impact that it has on species that are clinging to extinction on planet Earth, whether it's the swift parrot or the Ayatollah skipper or any of the other ones that we're very lucky to have in Kingborough. And and in a blink of an eye they'll be gone. When you're talking about populations with just a few hundred, I often tell the story about being down on one of these properties and seeing about 50% of the global extant population of a particular species of orchid. I mean, these things are clinging to life on planet Earth, and it's entrusted to us to hang on to it. And that's not to stop urban growth or development or economic prosperity. It can happen. They're not mutually exclusive. You can have both, but we really do owe it to future generations and to the state and to the nation and to the world to not let those disappear on our watch. And that's why it's so important that we see these projects where they're planting 1,100 of the endemic shrubs, and they're protecting 30 hectares on of private land reserve on Bruny Island in one spot, and they're doing coastal remediation in the Spanish Heath, like clearing invasive weeds that are the things that are the chokehold preventing some of these species from hanging on planet Earth. So I just think it's enormously valuable, and it's a project that I think is greater than ourselves and greater than our council, and that's why I support it, and I thank the team for all the work they do in that space.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I note that I couldn't find a copy of this report on our website. Did I miss that? Can I get a copy?
It should be at the end of your agenda.
Yeah, no, but for the public. Something a bit easier for people to grab onto rather than going through what is a PDF within the PDF.
I'm so pleased you want that outcome too, so because so do we. So what I wanted to do was to make sure that the report went through council appropriately, came to you, and once it's done that, we'll put it on the website. But we'll also promote it a bit more widely than that, potentially through social media, to let people know that it's there. And you'll see from the past, you know, we did a very normal council report in the past, and this time we really tried to make it as engaging and informative as possible to a wide audience by using a lot of photos and quotes and stories so that people can digest that information. We made it interesting because we think it's really important that people understand what it is that this fund is and what it isn't. So that's why we did that. But also, excitedly, we've made a film about the Kingborough Environmental Fund, and we're going to release that soon too, and that'll be on the website and social media. So that's another way that people can engage with the fund.
Thank you. Can I have a follow-up? Would it be okay if your office sends me a copy of the link from the website once it goes live, just for myself? Thanks.
Further contributions? The recommendation is up there on the screen, so I'll put the motion. It's also on page 121. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against? Motion is carried unanimously. Page 121, notices of motion. There are no notices of motion. Item 17, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please, that in accordance with the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2025, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, application of leave of absence, lease of facilities, Kingborough Sports Centre, and the tender assessment AB2601 Wyburton Place and Clare Street reconstruction. So moved by Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Midgley. All those in favour and against? Motion is carried unanimously. So in accordance with Council Meetings and Councillor Workshop Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. So good evening to everybody who's been following along at home via YouTube, and to those in the public gallery. Thank you. Good evening.